You are listening to Culture Click on KQAL 89.5 FM Winona. I am Terry Tenseth. I'm your host for today. Last week, when you joined us on Culture Click, we interviewed Jean Papenfuss, director of the Polish Choir at St. Stanislaus, where a Polish Mass was celebrated on May 1st. Following that, we listened to some selections from the choir and then heard a musical performance from pianist Barb Dufresne performing Chopin. Today we have part two of Our Polish Heritage, where we interview Father Paul Brzeza, who was inducted into the Polish Hall of Fame for his efforts of preserving Polish culture in the Winona community. Father Paul is a retired priest who put his heart into forming the Polish Cultural Institute. He helped build a relationship with a city in Poland named Bytow, which is Winona's sister city. You're listening to Culture Click on KQAL.
All right. My name is Father Paul Brzeza, and I am retired. I'm a Catholic priest, but I still help at Cathedral, St. Casimir's, Viterbo and La Crosse, La Crescent, Hoka, Plainview, all over. But basically, I don't have a responsible job. I don't have to be the boss anyplace, which is very nice. I continue my hobby that developed into a full-time job of taking care of this place we call the Polish Museum. It was started 30-some years ago. When people ask me what my job is there, I always tell them I'm the janitor, because I have to make sure the place gets locked, make sure the lights are on, make sure the toilet isn't running after you flush it, make sure the roof doesn't leak real badly, make sure that we have money to decorate things. I do grant writing, I do scheduling, I do data gathering. I'm in the process of hiring a couple of interns from Winona State to do archival work for us, and I'm supposed to also be the archivist for the Diocese of Winona. That's just a new job I got. So, and I'm kind of wondering if I'm going to last through this, survive. It'd be nice if I had some help. Anyway, that's a lot of background about me.
Why is Winona so rich in Polish culture?
In 1855, that's 3 years after Winona had a stake driven in the ground at the corner of Huff and Broadway, and the city was divided into four pieces, the first two Polish people came to Winona, a Brunk and an Eichmann. By 1857, my own grandfather on my mom's side, great-grandfather, came from Poland. And there wasn't a big influx at that point until about the 1870s. And if you do any reading of history, you'll find out during that time we were occupied since 1793, after Kosciuszko, Thaddeus Kosciuszko, had fought for us in our American Revolution, had gone back to do the same thing over in Poland for his own country. But they were attacked on three sides, by Russia on the east, Germany on the west, and Austria on the south. And they were defeated and occupied by those three countries for until 1918, Treaty of 1917, Treaty of Versailles. And then they were given their existence back. So that was about 140 years that we didn't exist as a country at all. Treaty of Versailles, we came back into existence, but the western edge of Poland was just slightly east of Gdańsk, about 70 miles. It ran through our sister city, Bytów. That stayed in German occupation till the end of Second World War. So people don't realize that we were part of Germany still. Now, the Chancellor, Otto von Bismarck, said, I have a quote on this in the museum, bash the Poles till they've had enough. It's the only way we can survive. They weren't allowed to speak their language. They were not allowed to practice their faith. They had to serve in someone else's army. My father's father skipped out, lied to get out of the country, and said they belonged to a lady that was on the boat. They got off in New York, said goodbye to her. They didn't know her to start with, and they didn't know her after that either, but that proceeded to come here. Now, they were quite late in the 1880s. In the 1870s, the biggest exodus from Poland and the biggest influx in Winona took place, 1870s and 80s. And it was mostly because of that problem with their faith and their government, with the fact that it wasn't their own government and they had to try to survive. And the city of Lesno, which today has about maybe 700 or 800 people, lost 300 people in 1 year who left. And you should be aware of the fact that the area we come from is only about 20 miles in diameter. So we are Bozhestkovy, we are Ugošć, Bitov, Kosuzhina, Poslava Dombrova. Those are the cities that come to me real quickly. And most of them are not much bigger than Homer. They came to this area and settled in the same 20 miles. So you've got this exodus of 6,000 people moving here. And they settled pretty much in 20 miles of diameter. So we are in Winona, Fountain City, Dodge and Pine Creek, and Trempealeau. Now, 95% of Winona's Polish people are then from that one area, which is Kashubian. We are Kashubian Polish, and the kids from Poland will say, you're Swedish, you're Russian, you're German, but you are not Polish because you speak a different language. But that's the language that was spoken in Winona. So we were not just criticized by the fact that we couldn't speak English, we were also criticized by Polish people who said we didn't know how to speak Polish. And you couldn't practice anything that you learned in Poland because you weren't certified here. So you couldn't be a doctor, you couldn't be a nurse, you couldn't be a pharmacist, you didn't have any certification. And you couldn't get it because you didn't speak the language. So everybody had to be a common laborer. The women took in laundry, and the men all worked for the sawmill. 2,000 people were employed by the three big sawmills in Winona, 1,200 of them were Polish. And then the sawmills closed in 1910, now what happens? So there was also a secondary exodus from Winona. So Winona has daughter cities in Jamestown, in Scranton, North Dakota, in Weibo, Montana, St. Philips, Montana, Haver and Hoagland, Montana. There's little settlements of people that 1911, 1914, during First World War, were migrating to find, after the sawmills closed, someplace that they could still homestead. But the original settlers from the 1870s stayed here. So we have this big group of people, except you should be aware of the fact we are not the largest group in Winona. There's 4 or 5% more Germans than there were Polish people. And that seems so strange. Why would they? They just left being neighbors to Germans. They come over here and do the same thing. But it might be because they learned to coexist. The land is very similar to here. Hilly, Puklivati, we call it in Kashubia. And it's got a lot of creeks. There's a lot of fishermen. We're only 50 miles from the Baltic. And we had this little language thing that made us, even as Polish people, stick together. That kind of answer your question of why we got this big?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Now, when you ask questions, be aware of the fact you're going to get a half-hour answer, no, and you may not want that.
How do we keep the traditions from the past, present, in Winona now?
With a lot of effort, because if you want to keep a tradition alive that's six generations old, you're fighting a losing battle. If it's a cute tradition that makes you taste good, or makes you have a good taste, rather, not taste good, or it gives you a pleasant feeling, those traditions can carry on. But if it involves some effort, like trying to keep a language alive, I would be willing to bet you could canvass the people in church tonight. We sang the national anthem, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Except, I think I was singing it in front. I couldn't hear the choir singing it. And everybody I looked at in church, nobody had their mouth open. But the words are there in the back of the book. So I take our board members at the museum and our people that come in, and we just tell them, stand, we're going to sing the national anthem, you know. Eventually they'll relearn it, but it's kind of like beating them over the head with a hammer. And that's destined to happen. Even in Poland, the Kashubian language in Poland is, for all practical purposes, gone. We used to have a sermon in Polish once a month at St. Stan's when I was a kid. They have sermons in Kashubian in Poland once a month, which means they're right on the border of losing the language totally. It's only spoken by old people, rural communities. It's not spoken in big cities at all. They use standard Polish. which is younger than Kashubian by about 500 years, and not as musical as ours is. The nice part, and the reason why the Polish people there love us so much, is because that little Kashubian that we have retained never changed. If you live in a where a language is alive, it goes through a metamorphosis and transitions, and it grows. But here, it couldn't grow. It was a language that wasn't spoken anymore and wasn't alive. The people that were using it were dying. As a result, it stayed the same way it was 120 years ago, which is kind of just fascinating to it. But I already forgot your question.
Well, how do we keep the tradition alive?
How do you keep it alive?
What do you do at the museum, for example, to try to keep the history
That's
alive?
That's what I said. I beat him over the head and say, we're going to recite this national anthem. And then we start our meeting with the Oichenash. It was in the book today, but they didn't say it at the altar. So I'm sure the pastor can't. His mom was Polish, but he's very little Polish. And so you have to find people who have some interest and then cultivate that interest. And that's hard work. And I'm hoping even tonight I'm going to go beat the drum to see if I can get volunteers. Someone who's willing to work with us, like yourself. But you have to show up. If you expect me to call you and at the same time help in all these five parishes and at the same time write for grants and at the same time take care of the building, it's probably not going to happen. But if you come someday and say, here I am, I've come to do your will. It's very scriptural, you know, with Samuel in the Bible, the Old Testament. And we had our own set of dancers. One woman whose daughter was with us tore the whole thing apart because the dance instructor told the kids to look into each other's eyes when they held their hands. Oh, how terrible. Those kids are only 18. How can they be looking in their eyes? Can you imagine? I called those parents and said, we have to call, this has to discontinue. This has to.
Really?
Yeah. And so.
With the costumes, Grandma told me how many ribbons you had on your wreath meant how many boyfriends you had. Is that true?
Yeah. And the girl that was talking to me said they didn't have any boyfriends. So they used to ask their uncles and relatives to be able to buy a ribbon for them. Because the guy had to buy the ribbon and give it to you. And they're boys and they're friends. That counts.
Okay. So necessarily if you have a lot of ribbons, it doesn't mean you've been around the block.
Right.
Okay.
It could mean you were just able to talk somebody into buying a ribbon for you. Yeah, great, yeah.
What else traditionally in the costumes like we saw tonight at Mass, what do they symbolize, the different flower patterns? Things like
they come from the different regions. There's Krakowian, there's Warszawian, there's Ars Kashubian. The girls in Kashubian costumes have a very flowery skirt and quite flouncy or broad, you know. And they generally wear a vest with the designs on them. And the boys wore a long blue jacket and boots and had striped pants. We would wear a kind of a flat hat that Kosciuszko wore. It's kind of a square top, but it fits with a point in the front, hangs down to your ears, and you'd always have an ostrich feather coming out of it.
What does the feather symbolize?
Got me. It's just part of the, that's tradition. You just do what's traditional. I'm sure there's a reason or a meaning. I've never had time to dig it out. And we'd have a money belt on the side. And to make money belts, we use washers. And so that when you dance and go up and down, it would jing. So the girls would know that you're kind of well off. So, you know, those are traditions and costumes. But we try to keep Dingusa Day alive. That's where we switch the girls on Monday after Easter. On leap year, the girls switch us on Monday after Easter, then we'd go on Tuesday. And now since that's politically incorrect, you can't switch anybody. In Poland, they squirt the girls with perfumed water. But some guys that get kind of crazy about it, the girl that talked to me on the phone today from Poland said she won't go out of the house on Monday after Easter because they'll do pails of water. And if you got to change clothes 4 or 5 times a day, it gets a little nerve-wracking. So. And the more you say no, you know, the more they're going to chase you and do it. But that's Dingusa Day. Dingu Dingu Podvayaya Nexa Kleba Tukoyaya. I switch you. I want two eggs. I don't want bread. I want two eggs. See, I could take things out of your Easter basket because you were still asleep and I caught you. And then you have to give them whatever they want out of your Easter basket. At Christmas time, we still have the opatki. It's an unleavened bread. And the father breaks it in half, gives half to his wife, gives her a kiss, wishes her well, begs for forgiveness, any wrongdoings, anything that, you know, would be between them. Then the mother goes, and then he goes to everybody at the table with his half and gives a piece from his half to all the children. She goes the other way around the table and gives a piece from all of hers to all of the children. It's a tremendous tradition. Christmas time, you're supposed to put a little straw underneath each plate so that, you know, Christ was born in a stable. You set an extra plate. Sure, because Mary and Joseph are looking for a place, so I never know. And didn't Christ say that what you do for the least of my brothers, you do for me? So my Aunt Mame and your great aunt would have invited the soldiers from Camp McCoy to come over to her house and have Thanksgiving dinner with us and Christmas dinner. Didn't know who they were, just come over. Those are the traditions that are the easiest ones to follow. We still sing all the Christmas songs. I can sing, I was in a little choir here. The people from Poland laugh at us because we don't know what we're singing. But I can sing at least 15, 20 songs by heart that are Christmas melodies. Traditions, but I don't know what they mean. Never did learn as a kid, you know, because by then I'm the fourth generation. It was pretty well gone.
Favorite Polish dessert?
We'd have pierogi, we'd have gumki, cabbage rolls, you know, pigs in a blanket. Polish sausage, of course. I make Polish sausage. I make sausage and I'm Polish, therefore it's Polish sausage. And people love it. It's the best bologna they've ever eaten. What else do we do that's... you should have poppy seed cake with a layer of lemon pie filling over the top, with a layer of white powdered sugar frosting over the top of that, and it would be a yellow cake mix with poppy seed in it. So it stands about this high and very tasty. It's nice. Moist as can be. It's not too bad. But it's poppy seed coffee cakes, prune coffee cakes, and mostly Polish food is peasant food.
At this time, Father Paul Breza unfortunately had to leave, as he was running late to his own induction ceremony into the Polish Hall of Fame on the evening of Saturday, May 1st. We hope we can catch up with him next week to delve a little bit further into our Polish heritage culture here in Winona, Minnesota. You've been listening to Culture Click, part of KQAL's original programming. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.